circuses on the air.
The president does.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. Win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And good morning and welcome in, Mr. Dave Schwann.
Good morning to you, Dave.
Can you believe it? It's 17 years ago. It's this Tuesday was 9/11.
I know. I've been thinking about that.
And it's on Tuesday, which is,
right.
is when it was,
right.
obviously.
Yeah. Everything lines up just the way it did in 2001 for the observance this week.
The attacks killed almost 3,000 people, caused at least $10 billion in property and infrastructure damage. And what I remember... How did you find out about it? Like,
I was at Illinois Radio Network as their morning anchor, and at the time we were doing 2-minute updates that happened to be at 45 past the hour that we would distribute to the affiliates.
Sure.
I had just got done with my 7:45 update. I made a quick phone call to somebody. I opened the studio door, and we had a bullpen area where, you know, you could work
sure.
the general area there,
sure.
the TV there. And our sports guy said to me as I opened the door and walked in, he said, "Dave, a plane just hit the World Trade Center in New York." And, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Something was terrible there.
Yeah.
And then the second hit.
Right.
Now we knew this was no accident.
No, exactly.
And, I'm getting chills just talking about it again. And just everything that happened in quick succession. I went downstairs to the lobby of the building. The security guard said that they just hit the Pentagon. You know, it was,
right, it was chaos.
Absolute chaos and confusion.
Usually, back then, I kind of do it now, too, is 7:30, I'll watch WGN Morning News, and usually after Dean's segment, I'll throw on the Today Show just to see what they're doing, you know, or flip it around a little bit, and they're an hour delayed, and they still are today, you know, because they're on Eastern time.
Yes.
So, I was watching a segment, and all of a sudden, they went live. So,
mm-hmm.
the picture went to a live moment
yep.
in New York.
Right.
And, I have a recording of this. Let's take a listen.
As mentioned, we have a breaking news story to tell you about. Apparently, a plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center here in New York City. It happened just a few moments ago, apparently. We have very little information available at this point in time. But on the phone, we do have Jennifer Oberstein, who apparently witnessed this event. Jennifer, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Katie.
Hi. Can you please tell me what you saw and to give me any information about what's going on there?
Yes, I have to tell you, it's quite terrifying. I'm in shock right now. I came out of the subway at Bowling Green. I was heading to work in Battery Park at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, and I come out, and I heard a boom, looked up, and there was a big ball of fire. I'm now looking north at the World Trade Center. And it is the left twin tower, if I'm looking north. I'm in Battery Park right now, and you can hear the fire engines and the emergency crews behind me. And it is unbelievable. When the fire first burst, it was a... Hello?
Go ahead. We can hear you.
...in air like I've never seen before. As you know, I used to work in news. I've never seen any fire like this in the air. And the pieces of the building were flying down. It looks like... It's like the top, I can't even tell you, maybe 20 floors. Intense smoke. It's horrible. I can't even describe it.
Do you have any idea what kind of plane it was?
I'm sorry?
Do you have any idea what hit the World Trade Center?
What it was?
Yeah, what kind of plane? We're getting reports that an airplane hit the building.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Honestly, I was walking up, and it looked up and saw a big boom and fire. You know, I got to tell you, we were all saying around here that it was very interesting that it would be a bomb and it would be so high up. So perhaps it was a plane. We have no talk of a plane. However, I have to tell you, there are still things flying in the air. I mean, it's mind-boggling, and it's horrifying.
Jennifer, it's Matt Lauer. I'd like to ask you, while you were close to the building, or have you, since the explosion, seen anyone who's been injured being taken out of the building? Are there ambulances dealing with people on the sidewalk around the building?
No, I have not. I have not gotten that close. I have to tell you that my father works in the World Financial Center, and I first called over there to see, because it's next door, to see, you know, if he was okay. I couldn't get through, and I'm far away right now. I thought it might be a little dangerous to get too close. I saw lots of debris coming down, and right now I'm in Battery Park. I don't know, you know, it's probably a 5-minute walk from here to the World Trade Center, but the smoke is incredible.
Building. Oh, another one just hit. Something else just hit. A very large plane just flew directly over my building, and there's been another collision. Can you see it? I can see it on the shot.
Oh, my.
Something else has
just...
And
we
that
just saw
like
a plane circling the building.
It is in the other building.
We just saw a plane circling the building.
So there you have it.
Yeah, Dave, we should reiterate that this
is from 9/11.
From 9/11.
Yeah, I thought about that, too. Yeah. From 2001. Yeah. By the way, subway station that was destroyed in the 9/11 terrorist attack. It was a Cortlandt Street subway station. It was completely obliterated. It just reopened this past week.
Is that right?
17 years later.
Yeah. You know, we were there in May, Dave, and I would recommend, as sobering as it is, I would recommend to anybody who's visiting New York to take some time and go to the 9/11 memorial there.
Absolutely.
Spend some time. You know, many of us, you know, it's hard to believe that there are some people that don't remember this now, because it's been, you said, 17 years.
Yeah. Ashley, when were you born?
97.
Yeah, so you were,
so
just
you
a
were
kid back
four,
then.
Maybe? Three, yeah. Four?
Yeah, I was about, yeah, three.
Yeah. So, you know, there are people that are younger than Ashley that know of this, but they, you know, they wouldn't remember it. But I really do. It's worth the effort to get up there. Now.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Switching gears completely, we were talking at the beginning of the show about the passing of Burt Reynolds, the passing of Bill Daly from I Dream of Jeannie and the Bob Newhart show. Art Hellier, and this might not be a name as familiar, because he was the big morning guy in Chicago radio. He worked at WGN for a little bit too, but it was WCFL. And WAIT that he worked at. He was a Chicago radio pioneer, and he really kind of established what morning radio was all about. Let's take a listen.
Carol March and I Remember You. Those first two songs do sound ominous. There'll be some changes made in I Remember You. I do want to tell the fellows in the front office here, the top brass, that three other companies are after me right now. The phone company, the light company, and the gas company.
He achieved his greatest fame as the witty and irreverent morning madcap on the former WCFL, among other stations. He also had a 20-year run as a local and network TV announcer and radio in Chicago, and hosted news, talk shows, game shows, sports, and other programs. And Radio Hall of Famer Chuck Shaden knew and interviewed Art some years ago, and he joins us this morning. Good morning to you, Chuck.
Good morning, Dave.
You know, when we talk about legendary radio morning show hosts in Chicago, you know, we think of Wally Phillips and Uncle Bobby and Spike and Larry Lujak and Stephen Gary, Jonathan Brandmeier, Robert Murphy. These are all recognizable names to a generation. Many don't know the name Art Hellier, but he was the guy that laid the groundwork in Chicago for that type of morning programming.
Absolutely. Art was there, and he was, he was more of about entertainment than he was of news and weather and traffic and all of that sort of thing, although they jumped in and around him with some of that stuff. But he was there being zany and making you laugh in the morning, and he did that royally.
Now, I've heard you say this before. Art was an originator and perhaps the foremost exponent of any zany off-the-wall comedy on the air. You know, this was the show to listen to. I mean, really, in the 50s and 60s, you know, you heard about the Dick Biondis and some of the rock DJs and so forth, but this was a true radio guy who loved talking to the listeners. I mean, he played music, but yeah, he was the guy that kind of started it all.
Well, he was the first one, I think, to use the wild lines and the drop-in voices and all that, and that, of course, was courtesy of his pal Lenny Kaye, who was his record turner and master of finding just the right cut on a 78 RPM record.
Now, he never swore. He never really crossed the line in that way, but he could be edgy.
Well, he was opinionated, and he, you know, if somebody criticized him, I think he, if it was really constructive criticism, it was okay. But if it was stupid, he would say so. You know, Art was the kind of a guy who, if the program director of a station thought that Art was talking too much and not playing enough music, the program director would write a little memo to Art and stick it on the bulletin board in the station. Art would walk over there, he'd see the memo, he'd tear it off the bulletin board, he'd go on the mic and on the air, and he'd read the memo. So he says, well, if you people don't want, if you want to hear more music, you're going to hear more music. And then he shut up and next did nothing but play music. And the phones lighted up, and people were going crazy because they wanted Art Hellyer. And then eventually the sheepish program director walked in and said, well, go ahead and do what you were doing.
Did he put another note on the bulletin board? Scratch that.
Right. Or if they couldn't put up with that anymore, they'd fire him. And then Art would pack up and he'd go to another station over the weekend. He'd be back and the whole audience would go there. And that program director was sitting over there with nobody listening to him anymore.
Right. But here's the thing, too. Like, program directors who hired him, because he was fired and hired a lot, they knew what they were kind of getting into. They wanted the ratings. But with the ratings was Art Hellyer. And you were going to, you know, some hell was going to be raised on the air. And that's why he kept his ratings, right?
Well, that's right. People love the irreverence that Art had for authority and that sort of thing. Although he would never do something that was illegal, or he never called out on anything. But he said, "Well, the program director told us to do this. If you don't want to do that, well, why don't you call him up yourself?" And then he'd give the home phone number of the program director on the air. And this occurred. Art was on in the morning, early in the morning. So the guy's phone's ringing him out of bed.
That's awesome. That's
almost didn't like that either.
No, I'm
but
sure
Art
they
was.
Didn't.
That's the way he was.
Radio Hall of Famer Chuck Shaden, everybody. Chuck, you've got. I want to throw your website out there as well because there's a great documentary on Art on your website. You got all kinds of other great stuff going on too.
Speaking of radio.com.
There you go. Thanks again, Chuck.
Thank you, Dave.
Love Chuck Shaden.
He's the man to talk about Art Hellyer.
He absolutely is. A couple other things in our history. 1932, the Chicago Cubs clinched the National League pennant. Let's see here. 1949, the Lone Ranger premiered on ABC TV. First appeared in 1933 in a radio show, of course, because I grew up more watching, obviously, the TV show that was on with Cisco Kid on Sunday mornings on WGN TV, right? Later, the Milton Berle started the Texaco Star Theater. 1953, Ernie Banks became the first Chicago Cubs, first black player for the Chicago Cubs. 1964, Bewitched premiered on ABC TV. Lost in Space premiered. And then Richard Nixon appeared on Laughing, if you remember that, in 1966. Right. So Judy Carn kind of introduced him, and this was kind of a big deal. Let's take a listen.
NBC, beautiful downtown Burbank. Oh, hello, Governor Rockefeller. Oh, no. I don't think we could get Mr. Nixon to stand still for a socket to me.
Socket to me?
There you have it. A little laughing this morning.
What year was that again?
No, gosh, that was 1968.
Okay, just before or just after he
I believe it was,
became,
before.
Was elected?
Yeah, it was before, before. And, of course, it's big TV premiere week, so shows like Mary Tyler Moore, MASH, Cosby Show, Bewitched, they all premiered this week. And in 1987, Walter Payton scored an NFL record. It was his 107th rushing touchdown. How appropriate for opening weekend for NFL.
How about that?
Yeah. Playing the Packers tonight.
Big night tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a big night. You know, what's funny is I was talking to my son and the kids like what we were going to do tonight, and they're all like, we're watching
what
the Bears
mean?
Game.
What are we
gonna
do
it's
going to
be a big game. Big game.
You are listening to station WGN.
Oh, a microphone.
And a phony at the mic.
Whoa! And radio became an accepted vehicle for nationwide news and opinion.
Notify all radio and TV stations to broadcast the following message.
comedy spot?
No, Bubblehead, this is a comedy spot.
You're a fun guy, Dave. You're lonely on an island.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is exciting, isn't it?
5, 4, 3, 2.
He's pounding down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can be done?
How much owe you, ma'am?
$1.50.
Keep change.
Just keep your eye out for that Mr. Vanderpump.
Let me have a Diablo sandwich, a Dr. Pepper. Make it fast. I'm in a goddamn hurry.
You want something?
Hush, Bubby, Dave.
We got no time for that crap. You son of a bitch.
Diablo and Doc.
Stack in my sleep.
You must be in a hell of a hurry, huh, Sheriff?
Bet your ass on that boy.
Oh, you couple of mess, sir. Let me help you out here. Get that off of there. That's a way for an officer.
Multiply.
Who are you chasing? Somebody chasing you?
Nobody chasing me, boy. I've been chasing a goddamn maniac all the way from Texarkana, Texas.
Really? Was he a bank robber?
Book robbing.
Huh?
Bank robbing his baby. Is it alongside of what this dude is doing?
Yeah.
Almost killed 20 law officers. Driving through people's backyard, knocking down mailboxes. Got abroad in the car, took across the state line, got the man out. I don't think he's got a permission, and that's getting him. How's that for hijinks? What a...
Oh, let me pay for it.
No,
you're an officer of the law. I'd be honored.
Yeah, much obliged.
Where's the can? I got to get the square.
And it's short time to get there. I'm eastbound to watch old bandit run. Old smoke has got
the... And good morning, everybody. It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. So much inappropriateness in that clip, Roger Strategy.
I'm going to get that some.
So bitch. I think you could say that at 2 in the morning, can't you? It's in context of the movie.
Yes.
Ashley had to take out one SHIT out of that, which she did a very nice good. Job. Yeah, but yeah. The rest of it, what are you going to do? It's part of the show.
I know. It's what makes the movie.
I love that movie, and they don't make comedies like that anymore.
No.
I wouldn't call it a cinematic classic, but Smokey and the Bandit with Burt Reynolds and Jackie Gleason is probably one of my top 20, we'll say.
Of all films?
Oh, it's just a funny comedies.
Of comedies. Of comedies. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I watched it about 3 billion times when I think it was on HBO when we first got cable as a kid.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Ashley, good morning to you.
Well, good morning to you too, young man.
What's happening? How are you?
I'm doing great.
I don't hear Ashley. I'm talking to Ashley. Hang on. Hold on.
Oh.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you are. Nice to talk to you. Hey, so Burt Reynolds, I mean, it's funny. I kind of figured out by reading, you know, some of the press about his death, what age the reporter was or whoever posted it was, based on the movies they highlighted in the headline.
Yeah.
It was like Burt Reynolds from Boogie Nights fame dies. Really? From Boogie Nights? That's where you think that's the big movie? And then you see, you know, Deliverance, Smokey and the Bandit, Cannonball Run, and some of the older ones, Starting Over, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Mm-hmm. Those were the movies that really he was known for. Boogie Nights was kind of like a comeback, I guess, for him at some point, right?
Yeah, it was, actually. Yeah, he had been kind of out of the scene for a while.
He was.
And that was the big part of that movie, was that he made a comeback and was awesome in it.
Yeah.
He got some kind of recognition. Did he get nominated for that, I think so. Supporting actor or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and listen to this. He was a top grossing star every year from 1978 to 1982, equaling the longest stretch the business had seen since the days of Bing Crosby in the 1940s. In 1978, he had 4 movies playing in theaters at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, he was big.
Yeah.
He really was big. You could not get through a season of a year without a Burt Reynolds movie.
Movie roles he turned down. Ready?
Oh.
Han Solo.
No Star way. Wars.
Yep, he turned down Han Solo. Retired astronaut Garrett Breedlove and cop John McClane in Star Wars. No, no, wait.
No.
They didn't write that right.
No.
Where's my editors? No, John McClane was in Die Hard, of course.
Right.
Respectively. And then Terms of Endearment was, I think, the retired astronaut that he didn't buy.
Oh, right. That was...
Yeah.
Chinatown.
Yes, that's right. That's okay. Right.
Right, thank you.
He was Milo's former first choice to play R.P. McMurphy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest as well.
Oh, he would have been great in that.
So he has more movies he turned down.
Yeah.
Than anything. And, Smokey and the Bandit, as we were... The Longest Yard, too, of course. We got to talk about that one.
Oh, yeah. Smokey, you know what? Yeah. My... And it's an unsung... classic, in my opinion, Hooper.
Oh, that's right. He did
this
Hooper.
Was the most tongue-in-cheek movie from start to finish.
Yeah.
You know that they were just making it because they must have done it like on a weekend, and they did every stunt they could think of. I think it was his homage to stunt people in the movies.
Yeah, sure.
And the best part of the movie was the closing credits.
Yeah.
Where they kept showing all the outtakes.
That's right.
It was hilarious.
Now, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. His relationships were a big highlight, too.
Oh, yeah.
So the first one that was big was Dinah Shore, who was 20 years older than him.
Right.
Right.
I know he
dated Goldie Hawn. I know he dated Farrah Fawcett, but then Sally Field also.
Was his co-star in
Smokey the Bandit. Judy Karn from Laugh-In. They were married.
Yeah.
And then at Lonnie Anderson, of course.
Mm-hmm. Which kind of didn't end too well.
No.
Yeah.
Didn't end well.
Yeah.
The Trans Am he drove in Smokey and the Bandit. I wanted two things. I wanted that Trans Am, and I wanted the, as a kid, I was 10 years old, and I wanted the I think it was a Pontiac Firebird, also in the Rockford Files.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what my dad's like, at 10 years old, he's like, you want to watch the Rockford Files? I'm like, yeah, it's cool,
great
man.
Show. And you haven't even touched on his TV shows.
Oh, that's right. The Evening Shade.
Yeah, was the real big one.
He did a detective series, too. For
Dan August. Great.
Oh, Dan August. I was going to say B.L. Stryker in your later years.
Right, that was later. But earlier, Dan August. Now, that was a cop show.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
He also, so listen about this, Smokey and the Bandit. Written and directed by his pal, stuntman Hal Needham, grossed $126 million. That's $508 million today, and only Star Wars took in more that year.
Wow.
So it was released the same year.
Yeah.
What was he carrying? 400 cases of what across state lines?
It was beer.
Yeah, but what brand?
Oh, I forgot.
It was Coors.
It was Coors. Yes.
Yep, it was Coors.
Because at that time... You could only get it in one place.
Yeah.
They did not have nationwide distribution.
Right.
People would, all over the country, people were driving over there to get Coors.
But even when it was in Wisconsin and not in Illinois, I remember my grandfather stashing it in his trunk.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All right. Some surprising facts about Bruce, and then we're going to talk about Bill Daly in a little bit.
Yeah.
He posed nude in a 1972 issue of Cosmo.
On a fur rug or bearskin rug or something like that?
Ashley's looking that up right now.
Yeah, and she's going to have fun when she sees that. But he also
70s, yeah.
he also in later years admitted that he regretted doing
he
that.
He did. Yeah. He sold though 1.6 million copies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was around the time of Deliverance. He turned down the role in Boogie Nights 7 times before they finally convinced him to do it.
I bet you he probably turned it down based on the content of the movie. The storyline?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, because it was much later, and, you know, he was winding things down. He wasn't sure if that's the vehicle that he wanted to come back in, nor that it would do anything, you know,
at
the box office.
He hurt himself in a movie that affected him the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a movie called City Heat in 1984.
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, hurt himself.
Well, he broke how many bones in his body?
Over time, it was like 46.
Yeah.
He had an impromptu pie fight with Double Dare host Mark Summers on The Tonight Show. Now, that was in the early 90s, but it was real, and he was pissed.
Yeah, some people thought it was staged.
Yeah, and there was another one where he was on with Dom DeLuise and with Johnny Carson and whipped cream down his pants and all this other stuff, and it was parodied by Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman
on Saturday Night Live,
which was hysterical.
Now, I'll tell you this, and it's so weird, because I've always loved Gumball Rally. always loved it.
I don't even know what the hell that is. What is that?
You don't know what Oh, man, I thought you knew everything.
So
Gumball Rally was a mythical race across country. In different cars and stuff, and there was a grand prize of $1 million or something like that. And the movie, the setup in the movie that some rich sheik put up the money and expected his son to win. And so it was... Reynolds and Dom DeLuise.
Yeah, right.
Together in a car. Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, yeah, in a car. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this was, and this was the race. It was the most hilarious thing that I'd seen in a long time. I mean, tears coming down my face.
Those are people would probably rank those as not very highbrow movies.
But
they were funny.
Oh, yeah. But the problem is, on Amazon Prime, because I've been looking for Gumball Rally for, well, since I got Amazon Prime, it's not available. Only Gumball Rally 2, which was a very weak...
They
made money off of the first one.
Yeah.
They'll do it again.
Yeah.
But it was so weak. It really... because I saw it the other night. But the first one's just not available. And I can't understand why, unless because there were so many stars in it that they haven't cleared the estates
of everyone to be able
to get it on. Yeah.
That's usually the holdup when you do stuff like that.
But it was, oh my gosh... Drop dead funny. Seriously.
Burt Reynolds dead at 82.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk about Bill Daly. Another TV kind of second banana. Cool guy. A lot of great stuff that he did over the years. Game shows, Genie, Bob Newhart, all that good stuff. We'll do it next on 720 WGN. And you know what? When I hear that music, it still makes me smile.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It still makes me smile.
Well, of course.
It's Inside Dripping Genie. You know, I've watched some of these like corny, campy shows like Gilligan's Island, The Monkees on MeTV if they've come on.
Right.
They're really hard to watch. They're not good.
They're dated.
Well,
extremely dated.
But they're just not good. I mean, it's not even about dated. It's not even about the jokes.
The
Genie
writing
is still funny. Genie is still funny to watch because it's slapstick and it's just so fun. But Bill Daly of I Dream of Genie, the Bob Newhart show, died this week at 91 years old. And that's like the Screen Gems logo.
Oh, at the end, yeah.
Yeah, get that out of there. So anyway, my story goes with this, and I don't want to make it, it's not about me, it's about Bill, but I want to tell you the story. My friend Al Schwartz, who I shared a board membership with at the Broadcast Museum, Al. If you look up Al, you will see that for 50 years, he was producing every television show and award show for Dick Clark Productions. For decades. I mean, brilliant man. And he's been retired for a little bit now. But when he was in Chicago here, living in Chicago, and Bill Daly was growing up here in Chicago, and he was a TV announcer at one of the TV stations here, too, Bill Daly was. They had a comedy act, and they would go around and they would tour. And Bill was his partner in all of this. And he announced on his Facebook page that, you know, he talked to Bill Zuck's wife and Bill passed earlier that morning. Nothing showed up. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I remember I called Dean Richards and I'm like, hey, or I emailed him and I said, Bill Daly died. He's like, I'm not seeing anything. Like, you know, you want to have some kind of confirmation out there. And finally Al Schwartz, helped the family out and got, you know, all the obit ready and so forth. So, Bill is, I think, really out of the main cast members of that show, you know, Barbara Eden's the last one left.
Yeah. Right.
In all of that. And, he was a funny guy. Bob Newhart actually talked about him with me on Monday's show, believe it or not, when he was talking about the Bob Newhart show. So Bob and him, because Bob's also a Chicago guy, grew up together in Chicago, too, and hung out. And, you know, they'd run into each other in the same circuits and all that other good stuff. But
I read something that they both were trying to do stand-up. They about wanted to be stand-up comedians here in town. They were trying to get started.
That's right. Yeah. I got a couple magical facts about I Dream of Genie. See how I did that?
I like that.
The song that
Ashley played on the way, mm-hmm. which was the ending of one of the seasons. That song that we know didn't exist until the second season. There was some goofy, like jazzy song that they mm-hmm. played in the first season. It was the second season when it was all in color. They came up with that one exactly. Yeah. On that series on Genie, Barbara Eden was pregnant for the first episodes of the season of the
series.
Yeah, she's pregnant. So if you ever watch that, she was wearing the big flowy outfit, but uh-huh. she was always hiding behind a couch, a sofa, and then she had this long flowy stuff that she didn't have the rest of the seasons because you could see her belly button in many cases.
Oh, son of a gun.
It's all you'll see if you ever watch it now. You'll see that she had all this garb on covering her up so that she couldn't mm-hmm. see because she was like 7 months pregnant.
Wow,
I mean you couldn't miss it. Larry Hagman and the cast found out I Dream of Jeannie was canceled from a security guard.
What?
They revealed that he learned about Jeannie's 1970 cancellation from probably the most Hollywood source imaginable, a guard in the studio lot. He'd been on vacation after completing the fifth season. When he came back to the U.S., the actor wanted to grab something from his dressing room. It then fell to the guy at the gate to lay the bad news that Jeannie was not going to have a sixth season. Barbara Eden says the same thing, that she doesn't, you know, she didn't get to keep a costume. She didn't get to go back. They destroyed everything. She had a bottle from like one of the first seasons, but never even had an original bottle.
What a shame.
There was a couple of reunion movies that were done, but Larry Hagman was doing Dallas. So Wayne Rogers from MASH stood in as Major Nelson, which was weird. It was it really didn't come. But Bill Daly was in there. Hayden Rourke, who played Dr. Bellows, the rest of the cast was in there. It was just not the original Major Nelson. But they did. Barbara Eden and Larry Hagman did show up together in one storyline together again, and that was on Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Eden was on Dallas, if you remember.
Yeah,
at some point. But anyway, Bill Daly also, who passed away at the age of 91.
And I got a correction.
Yes.
I stand corrected. Had a caller who chastised me to no end.
Uh-oh.
And my brain was elsewhere.
Okay.
So it was Cannonball Run.
Yeah, Cannonball Run. That's right. What I said that, yeah.
I was saying Gumball Rally.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell you were talking about.
Which was the
rip-off. I just let it go.
Thank you. I appreciate letting me dangle out there.
I thought it was just a movie I didn't hear of, because I said those Cannonball Run movies were great, and then you kept going Gumball.
And I missed your reference, and Gumball Rally was a ripoff of those, like total ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
I think Michael Vincent, he played in Airwolf, Jan Michael Vincent. I think started in the Gumball Rally, and it was a total ripoff of Cannonball Run.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah.
I was going to look it up at some point. All right, big show. Let me tell you what we got on. Bill Curtis joining us right after the news, talking about American Greed. You know, he was on the he's on the cover of the September Chicago magazine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. And he's pretty open in mm-hmm. this. He talks about, his son died.
Mm-hmm.
He had some mental illness issues. Mm-hmm. And he said he's absolutely right. There's still a stigma out there. And as we talk about all the crime in Chicago and the shooters at schools and all that other stuff, you know, I think a lot of these warning signs are missed or they're not reported.
Right.
And because, you know, people don't want to talk about it. People don't want to bring it up. People don't want to accuse somebody. People don't, want to put themselves in that position. And it's, obviously caused some issues because you hear later, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, he was a quiet guy. Oh, yeah, he talked about guns a lot. Yeah, or he did mm-hmm. this or he did that. And nobody said anything. So, Bill, we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
I filled in for Steve Cochran on Monday. Had a really, really fun show. And there's two interviews we're going to highlight. One is Bob Newhart and one is Mike Rowe. And we'll share those interviews with you at in the 3 o'clock hour. 4 o'clock, Patrick McCaskey from the Chicago Bears joins us. We'll talk a little bit about his grandfather, George Halas. And he wrote some books on sports and faith. We'll talk about that. And then at 4:20, this Joliet, what is it called again? I keep messing it up. It's the Joliet
Rocket.
the Joliet Rocket, which is a vintage 1940s train that's heading out next weekend.
Oh, nice.
That you can get tickets to, and we're going to talk to the folks from that organization as well. But for right now, it is 2:32, and here are the top stories with Roger Badish.